insert cheering sound effect here. Welcome to Bitstorm, a comedy game design podcast by two guys who know nothing about comedy nor game design, even after 200 episodes. I'm Ben Slinger. With me, as always, is Trevor Scott.
Yes, and thank you, and welcome to our lovely audience out there. Thank you. Okay, settle down. Okay.
Keep it down.
So this is our first live studio performance. I don't know. Like, you
it's
said
going
cheering,
badly.
And it's like...
Yeah, they're booing right now.
Boo.
As you can hear, they hate us. Damn it, Trevor, now you're going to make me have to do Foley on the edit.
You're the one who said insert cheering here.
This is our 200th episode. It's kind of crazy that we've been doing this for, you know, more than 4 years, really, because we did start at a fortnightly pace, interleaved with our other podcast, which quickly died a slow death.
It wasn't that slow.
No, pretty quickly we realized this is what we wanted to do. So tonight we are going to do some things a little bit different, and we'll bring those up as we get to them, I think.
Really? I thought we'd just blow our load at the start and just say, this is what we're doing tonight. But no, we'll
make
drip feed it throughout the night.
Yeah,
so Ben has a idea that he would like to deep dive into.
Sometimes
throw it away, Ben.
Sometimes we do this because as we are sort of hobbyist game devs ourselves occasionally, we don't usually finish much, but we have our ideas that aren't just prompted by random prompts. But this one actually came from because we are considering participating in the 7-day or 7D FPS game jam that's coming up in December, I believe. Mm-hmm. Where traditionally you had 7 days to build an FPS, as it sounds like. I think they open it up to it's basically just a 7-day jam now, but it probably does mostly focus on first-person shooter games. And so I was just trying to think of some interesting kind of mechanics around first-person shooters. And what I came up with was basically a game where it is obviously a first-person shooter, but all the shooting, all the actual damage that you're doing to enemies is indirect. And it's essentially via one or more drones who will do the attacking for you. But where the challenge comes in is you have to keep them powered up. So you're like shooting, whether it's just literally like arcing batteries at them that they grab out of the air or something and shoot into themselves, or if you've got some sort of electric arc gun that powers them up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sort of picturing that it becomes a bit of a plate spinning kind of deal, where you've got multiple drones on the go and, you know, maybe they can't hold a charge very long. So they start to fall out of the air or just power down and they can no longer, you know, perform their functions.
I do like the idea of these drones sort of like floating, you know, sort of 60 meters above the sort of earth, and then you've got to somehow get, you know, an extension cable up to this one, and then you got another one over to this one over here, and you got to make sure that, you know, you got plenty of torque in there, and then you can also have the remote control needs to be powered up as well. Like, it slows down, it depletes at a different rate, but you're still... Like, if you don't have the remote control going, then you can't control how they're all going in the air.
Okay, right? See, there's some interesting things I hadn't thought of. You could actually, I know you kind of said it as a bit of a joke, but actually having an extension cord to them with some, like, cable physics and stuff. Like, for one, that very much clearly indicates their maximum range. And so, as you go along, you could, like, upgrade power cord. Like, essentially, you get an extra extension cord and plug it in. Or, I mean, that lets you mix and match as well, in that maybe you've got, say, three different drones. Because I'm kind of thinking there's, like, a gunner drone, which is a standard kind of, you know, machine gun, sort of fast-paced gun.
Yep.
You know, rapid fire.
A support drone.
Some sort of support or healing drone, which can maybe heal you and or repair the other drones. And then something else, whether it's, like... some sort of buffs and debuffs or something, like And maybe it depends on, again, how you sort of
I kind of like this. The idea that the other one is just an Amazon drone. If you need new batteries, you send it off to go.
I mean, that's not a bad idea either. There are a lot of things I feel you could do with this.
It's like, get down to the local Tandy and pick me up some batteries. Okay.
Tandy? Oh, my God. I can't believe you pulled Tandy out.
That's Find awesome. It. Radio Shack.
That's for our American listeners. No, but
the same company.
I feel like there's a lot you could do. And so on the moment-to-moment gameplay, there you could do it in a variety of different ways. Like, if you've just got sort of an electrical arc gun, it could just be, okay, it's got a certain range, so you've got to, like, go over, oh, you know, your gunner drone's running low, you've got to go and charge them up, and, you know, you have to basically hold it on to them. And so you may be having to dodge enemies at the same time, you know, they're charging at you, you've got to strafe out of the way and keep your... You know, keep your aim good to keep that thing charged up. Or I wonder if there's actually a bit of, like, resource scavenging to do as you're going through this world where you're having to, like, create these batteries out of resources you find in the world or something, or create different things, upgrades and power.
I do like the idea of you've got, you know, high-tech stuff at the start, and then as you go through and as things sort of break down, by the end of the game, you've got like a huge Tesla coil running off the running out of your backpack, and it's like arcing electricity up to the drone.
I do like that, actually. That's cool. It's in that, yeah, you're having to scavenge parts to, like, replace and upgrade. And so, yeah, you're building this low-tech or at least, like, scavenged together, MacGyvered together stuff on top of... the, like, state-of-the-art drone control system you stole from the government or whatever the story is.
Yeah.
Speaking of the story, though, one of the things I actually thought could be really cool, again, if this was to be turned into a full game, was that each of these, you could really have these drones have personality. Like, I think these drones have AI and voice lines and dialogue as you go through this game. To the point that, like, maybe you don't even meet anyone else. This is almost you're trying to get these things home or back to your home or something. And maybe they're antagonistic to begin with, but they have to follow their programming. And over the course of the game, they end up liking your character and you become friends with them. Or I don't know. Like, I just feel like almost in a Portal 2 way with the, you know, you've got fucking Wheatley or whatever and... That there are these things that you have throughout the whole game that, yeah, just really have personality and are talking to you and very distinct personalities. Could be really cool.
Yes. And I do like the idea of it not being instant that they have the personality. It's sort of like you tap into them as you... Maybe they're just basic drones at the very start, but then when you break into the government facility and you get the new remote control, that's where it's sort of... sends like a virus across to them and they actually
or it's
start
like,
talking to you.
Yeah, it's like, or even as you upgrade them with your own, like, thrown together stuff, that gives them more of a personality than just the standard, you know, government drone.
There's just something about, like, seeing this drone, you know, with his personality, but it's kind of like one of those sort of, I don't know, the cool guy. So he's got, like, the glasses on, like the shades and all this sort of stuff. And it's basically you get to do some, like, customization through,
yes,
through adding different bits and pieces. And
definitely. And, I love the idea of having it being customized.
Yeah. And you know, it modifies the personality just slightly. But then... You know, when one of the drone's blades breaks off and all you've got is, like, an aluminum can, so you sort of cut out a really dodgy propeller and you just stick it on and it's like, it's got Pepsi on the top. And
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot you could do there. And, yeah, I love the idea of customizing them, whether that affects their stats or not, but essentially having hats and accessories for them. I love the idea of you didn't get, like, you've given your gunner drone 3 extension cords so they can go really high up and get a good distance, but you didn't charge them well enough, and so all of they're falling out of the sky and just screaming at you like, fuck, man, you gotta charge me, oh my god, I gotta fall, like as it hits the ground. And just like getting shitty at you when you haven't charged them well enough and stuff. Yeah, I think that would be really fucking fun. And yeah, I hadn't thought of it previously, but the resource
management... Oh no, the solar panel just got bird shit on it. It's not charging me up anymore.
Yeah.
I had to bring it up.
No, and I feel like because I'm thinking now, okay, you've got them all plugged into this thing. And yes, I like the idea that maybe you have to keep the main unit charged as well. Well, because actually, we're talking about extension cords, but if they're always on extension cords, then what are you? You're not shooting things to charge them. But maybe you can let them off the extension cord, and then you're having to like remote charge them. Or the other thing is like, yeah, maybe your sort of main unit. I'm almost thinking because you and I and some friends have been playing a lot of Deep Rock Galactic, but the mule in that sort of follows you around. That maybe the unit they're all connected to is sort of like the mule where it can walk by itself, but it, you know, it has to stand still to put out its solar panels and get a charge. Or maybe like if you're underground or whatever, they're like, it has to fucking plug into the wall for a while. And so that'll often be an area where you really have to defend and make sure you're keeping all your drones charged or whatever else.
I kind of like the idea of one of the drones... maybe the support drone is kind of scared of combat, so he keeps on, like, you know, hiding behind stuff and not wanting to come out if there's any combat around. You know that if there's, like, lots of damage on the gunner, then you need to be able to coax him out somehow. Come on, I'll give you some more customization options.
That's kind of fun. I like the idea of literally, of actually bringing it into their, like, moment-to-moment AI, their personalities as well. Because you could do some cool stuff where, yeah, like... always tries to find the spot that's out of line of sight of combat or whatever in the area.
But the problem is he's also... his controller's based on IR, which means that he needs to be in line of sight.
Just to complicate things. You have to set up mirrors and stuff.
And that's where ray tracing comes in. So now...
Oh, my God. So I guess from a... Because I love the idea of all of that. From a moment-to-moment gameplay of what your like first-person character is actually doing, what do you reckon? I think some just resource gathering is fine, whether that's, you know, in a No Man's Sky sort of way where it's just like, oh, scan things, like find bits, and you build it up over time. It's like, okay, I've got enough for an upgrade. Or, you know, maybe searching out. Aspect, like maybe you can see signs of things, kind of like in Deep Rock Galactic, where like, oh, there's, you know, a certain color of gems in this area, then if I dig through there, there's probably going to be something valuable or whatever.
Yeah. And depending on where we're actually basing this as well, like if it's based in like a mine or something like that that you're sort of traversing through, then that's totally different to if it's set in like a building and the drones are flying on the outside of the building and sort of going up the floors with you as you go.
I was thinking more just over sort of, you know, a general on land over, you know, across islands or something, and you've got a landmass that you're traveling.
Kind of like a Far Cry. Yeah. Far Cry, where you got lots of different little islands and maybe some indoorsy stuff that you have to go through, but then you're going through jungles and shit.
Yeah, and I think the indoor stuff obviously gives a different challenge because your drones may have less room to maneuver and move about. And I'm wondering, do you think are the drones completely autonomous, or are you having some input into, it's like, oh shit, we're being attacked by a swarm. You know, here's an area that the gunner should focus and make sure that the healer or whatever is doing his thing. Or do you reckon it's just, all right, as long as they've got enough power, they're kind of doing their thing. You know, I'm just running around, like, grabbing more resources because it's like, oh, shit, there's a, you know, a vein of fucking electrolytes because that's the power, that's the mineral that powers them over there. And so I have to, like, run and get that to make sure I can recharge the thing. Yeah, I don't know. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I do like that idea. I'm kind of thinking of it almost like a Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, where you've got the different... your drones are basically your companions. You as a character can't do much other than do the scavenging sort of stuff. But you can still sort of command your team of attack here. This one, repair this drone. And so you've got a little bit of
control.
Control, but you're more based around, okay, we don't have enough parts for that drone to repair that drone, so therefore I'm going to find some. And
I think to keep with the FPS stuff, even though I like the cable thing, I think going back to the original thing of, like, you still have to have some FPS skills to, like, hit them with the power arc or whatever to power them up. I think they do still have a maximum radius that you can maybe upgrade, but that's more about, like, Wi-Fi signal. And you've got, like... Because I'm picturing you've sort of got a HUD that tells you, like, their battery power, maybe, yeah, their signal strength or something. You could even have it that, like, if... Like, and again, maybe this is around the personality and how you upgrade them, but, like, the gunner will push right to the edge of their limits to the point that sometimes they might go out of range and
start falling out of the sky.
And just start falling out
closer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so you have to watch that sort of thing. Because I'm also thinking then you could make the choice sometimes. It's like, oh, shit, there's this massive thing coming. I need to give the gunner some time to do its attacks or whatever. So you can actually zap it with your zapper gun. And it's like it's essentially a stun gun, but you're using up some power that you otherwise could have, like, powered up your drone. So I feel like that could create a cool balance of how do I use these resources? Yeah. Sort of, I guess, or maybe even like crafting grenades or something, like stun grenades and different things that you could do. Yeah. So I don't know. I think we've covered a lot of the bases on that. The only other thing I will bring up is it could be really cool in VR.
Yes.
As most things, but...
Everything's better in VR.
That's what we say.
Okay, so now comes to the first of our new segments for tonight. I say new, but it's kind of a little bit new, little bit old. We're calling it Second Chance Click Pitch. So, what we're actually doing is we're going back to our very first episode of Bitstorm, and we're going to take those prompts, and we're going to try and come up with a different game design. The difference is we haven't actually checked what we originally designed.
I think that's good. I think it's good that we haven't checked. We're taking the same prompt. We don't necessarily remember what it was we came up with on
4 years ago,
approximately Wednesday, 12th of October, 2016. That is when it was released. It was a better time. Pre-Trump. Pre-Trump presidency.
Just pre-Trump.
Just.
Jeez, that's kind of scary, like the world that we were in at the time. But anyway. Our first one for tonight is minimum distance.
Minimum distance. Okay.
I mean, what's come to my mind is, like, minimum chips at like the fish and chips store. Okay, and it's like, this is like an Uber or taxi sort of thing, where it's the minimum distance that the taxi driver will go.
Okay. Yeah, well, I was going to say, it definitely brings to mind just like sort of circles of influence or circles of effect or something, right? So that's fine. Like, minimum distance around traveling is an interesting thing. Is this around... Do you play the Uber driver and you're trying to, like, get fares that are going to be easy?
Yes,
but there's a minimum.
If they're too close, you've got to get to the minimum distance. But you've also got to try and give the customer the best for their money. So you've got to try and plot a route that you're going to actually get back to their place with as close to that minimum distance as possible.
Is this just an Uber game, essentially, like a crazy taxi-esque thing, but it's less around getting somewhere in a time limit and more around being
getting somewhere in a distance.
Super efficient with your distance, and it, which means you have to be aware enough of the space that, like, you look at your map, it's like, okay, there are 7 fares that I could take, and it's about choosing the chain of those where it's like, well, this one's going to take me within, you know, X distance of this next one.
Oh, I've got a good idea.
Okay.
You know how much effective distance these people have got, and you're running on empty. So your fuel gauge is what's actually determining how many Ks you've got left. And you've got to plot out to get all these people back and still, because you don't have the money to buy your next tank of fuel. So the idea is that
so you have to make enough money.
You're making enough money.
I kind of like that because that's almost a checkpoint system there of, like, every time you go over the amount that you need for your next tank of, like, tank of petrol,
you get to
continue. But you have to take into account the distance from the end of your last fare to a petrol station.
The gas station.
And they've all got different, and the petrol costs different amounts at all the petrol stations. So, yeah, I think the game starts and you essentially are on empty. I don't think you've got an exact amount of kilometers. I think this
I think it's procedural.
Well, no. Okay, yes. I think that maybe the levels are procedural, but I mean, you don't. All you have is the gauge sitting there on E, and you have to, you have to learn over time how far below E you can go before you run out. Like, you don't have a gauge that says you have, you know, 57 kilometers that you can still travel.
I do like the idea that when the light comes on, you know that in game terms, you've only got 3 kilometers left, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think you'd obviously have to create some consistency around that. But yes, it's much more. And look, that also gives you the opportunity as a game designer to fudge things a bit if you need to.
There's just something about, rather than being in like a third person or something like that, the games of old that I still remember is having so much fun in a game like RC Pro-Am or something like that, and just driving a car from a top-down sort of view and pulling over. You can zoom out and see more of the map and still driving the car. And
right, kind of a GTA 1 or 2 sort of view as well, like a top-down. Okay, that's interesting. I was almost thinking it could be fun from a first-person view, because then you've got the actual, like, you know,
the fuel gauge right in your eye.
The fuel gauge right there. You're looking on your GPS that's in its, like, little stand in the middle. It could even be good as a VR game.
Yeah,
because then you're, like, looking in your rear vision mirror to see your person in the back. And
even though it's in the past, according to our users, in the future, on the 3rd of October, Star Wars Squadrons is coming out, and it's going to be fully VR and all this sort of stuff. I can't wait. I'm sure I'm loving it. Future Trevor is absolutely loving it. just like the X-Wing and TIE Fighter games of old, everything's going to be sort of viewable in the cockpit. So all your heads-up display is actually controls in the cockpit. So
yeah,
I do like that.
Pretty sure there's a word for that, and I'm not sure what it is, but yeah.
Yeah, I do like that idea of a VR game having to be the Uber driver, but in this case, we're not, you know, trying to service our clients with, you know, food out of the glove box or anything like that. This is purely just a distance game.
Yeah, essentially, it's like, okay. So I guess where the challenge comes in is you've got your GPS, so you can put in the shortest route between two points. I wonder if you can do some different options to, like, avoid
you go
traffic.
Through someone's backyard, and that's how you carve off a little bit of time.
Yes, definitely. No, I like that. I like that idea. And I wonder if that brings in, like, is there a negative
for
that?
It's a risk versus reward. Yes. I like the idea that Uber can, or whatever the name of it in this particular game is, they can track, you know, the damage that you've done, and that comes out of your pay packet. And so,
okay.
when it comes out of your pay packet, I'm talking about, you know, it's like a percentage that comes out of your fare and that sort of stuff. Maybe it's in the far future.
Well, or it could also just affect the rating that your passenger gives you.
Yeah, and that affects how much money
and that affects spend on you. Future things, or yeah, it may affect, yes, whether they tip you or different things like that.
Yeah.
But like if you're desperate and you're going to make nothing otherwise, then you might go.
Especially if you thought that there was a way through here, but there's now road work. You know, you can go through this person's backyard and
I think there's a risk.
Front yards.
Yeah.
And get around it and, you know, you go sidewalk surfing and
that's the other thing I was thinking is it could be that like you've got a couple of routes you could take. One's got heavier traffic, but if you're feeling good enough about swerving through the traffic, then like it's a shorter route but heavier traffic, maybe you'll get there. Whereas otherwise you can take sort of the easier route, but it's a bit longer, so you risk using up more gas.
Like the idea of if you cut every corner as you go on the fastest route, that's literally the minimum distance because you're carving off, you know, and you're not going those extra couple of meters to turn the corner. Therefore, you're not spending as much gas.
There's an achievement. There's definitely an achievement for like finishing a section or whatever.
Underneath
fill-ups.
Yeah, what was the designated minimum?
Exactly. Yeah, you'd figure out what the minimum could be. That's cool. I like that. That's another one that I could see trying to build in VR as a fun little, you know, pull over. Your passenger gets in the back. You get an updated GPS, and then it's just like, all right, get there without running out of fuel.
And I know, maybe you can actually get to the top of a hill, turn off the engine, and just coast down.
Yes. No, I like that. Bringing in those sort of aspects. I mean, yeah, whether it's turning off the engine or just, like, not accelerating and just, like, coasting down hills and stuff.
Yeah.
That's cool, because then you've got other options. It's like, oh, I could go this way, which is a bit long, like, you know, a bit shorter. Or I could go this way where if I get up to the top of the hill, I can literally coast all the way down to my destination and I'm going to be fine. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I love it.
Cool. That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure that is not the game that we came up with in the first
episode. I think it was maybe car-based, but it wasn't this.
It wasn't this.
Go back and listen. Well done, us. Go back and listen to the first episode. It's got some, you know, pretty terrible audio quality, but I feel like the games probably still hold up. I don't know. Well, I'll need to listen. Maybe they suck, and then I apologize.
The audio quality isn't actually that bad. Like, it was horrible at the start of Two Sweary Dads, but we did.
That's
an SM58 by now, and
that's true. By the time we got here, it wasn't too bad. Comparatively, it's still not quite as good. But
I mean, you can easily see the difference. Listen to episode 1 and then listen to episode 1.5, and you'll actually hear the difference to how we originally started our podcast versus where we got to by the start of this one.
That's true. All right.
So, this is our third segment for tonight.
Third segment. We're doing some different stuff. It's episode 200. We feel like we can, you know...
We're trying to mess around a bit tonight.
This isn't an entirely new one.
This is actually coming off of something that we did in the first episode, which was movie tie-in.
Exactly. So, what we're going to be doing is we're getting... what we've done in the past is just chosen movies, but Trevor, as part of his Discord bot, has whipped up a little random movie selector, I guess, pulling from the MovieDB. And what we're going to do, I think, is one of us will get a movie and we'll either... So, depending on the movie, we'll see how deep we go. If we can actually... If it's a movie we know or if the plot makes sense for a game tie-in, then we'll do a full sort of game tie-in. Otherwise, we may just go sort of use the title as a prompt. We're also getting the poster art coming back, so maybe we'll just use the art as a prompt. But let's see how we go. Are you going or shall I?
We both go.
Are we going to choose the best one? Or are we going to do
it both? I reckon so.
All right. Let's do it. Well, I got Saw 2.
And I got... Not another teen movie.
Okay. I feel like Saw, the Saw series lends itself to video games more.
It does. So let's go with Saw. It doesn't have to be the second one.
It doesn't have to be Saw 2. I don't know enough about the fucking 11 Saw movies or whatever there are anyway to be able to differentiate. But the general idea of ridiculous traps, essentially, put in place by Jigsaw.
I don't know, but something in my head just sort of crossed the idea of Saw with the movie Rubber. Now, if you remember the movie Rubber, it was about a tire named Robert who became a psycho killer and was sort of going around everywhere. I'm kind of liking the idea that this is a continuation of the game Saw, and in the game Saw, I'm just coming up with just a random video game in which a saw blade actually came to life and was going around killing people throughout the thing. So throughout the game.
Okay. So you're saying we're not doing a tie into the Saw movies.
Yeah, we don't need to do a tie into the Saw franchise because we know where that's going. It's torture porn. Let's go with a anthropomorphic
just saw from
blade.
The title. So just from the title, Saw 2, sequel to the critically acclaimed commercially
heavily flawed game.
Heavily flawed, commercially bombed game, Saw, which was about an anthropomorphic wood saw?
Yeah, like, I'm thinking circular saw, yeah.
Oh, circular saw, okay.
Yeah, but just the blade. So it's just the saw blade, not the circular saw itself.
Okay. I do like the idea, though, of kind of... can you find, like, a battery-powered circular saw, insert yourself into and then use that essentially as a vehicle, where now it's powering you to go really quickly?
I do kind of like that, but I also like the idea that our saw blade is looking for love.
Right.
Looking for their partner.
Look, okay.
And that
is their partner
could be a circular saw.
It could be a circular saw, or it could be a giant killing platform that is used in one of the Saw movies to put someone on a conveyor belt and slowly move them towards it while tied up. Okay, so you're a saw blade. Let's, to move away from Robert, let's make this a female saw blade.
Sally the saw blade.
Sally the saw blade. And she's escaped from the sawmill?
Yeah.
In the first game, presumably.
And right. So at the end of the first game, she was left in a barn to rust. Basically.
Okay, give me a synopsis of sort of the plot of the first game. She escapes from the sawmill.
She escapes her captors. It's kind of like a Limbo-esque sort of game, but with a lot of blood. So it's basically her rolling, and as she's rolling down hills and stuff, she manages to like cut
slice
some of her enemies in half.
Yeah,
but also she's just trying to get away. She can launch herself out every now and again, and sort of stick into wood to like climb up barns and all this sort of stuff. And
I'm sort of picturing this as a cross between Goat Simulator. Rock of Ages, where you're kind of rolling yourself down the hill. So, like, it's a lot of finding hills to go down. Yep. And, like, Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, I just love the idea of Sonic the Hedgehog, like, powering himself up, zooming forward, and then just, like, splattering blood everywhere as he, like, just bisects.
Oh my god, my arm! Green Hill Zone, and then you finish it.
You finish
like
it
Red
as
Hill
like
Zone.
Red Hills. Tails is now just known as Tail.
Yeah, unfortunately,
got a bit
cut
too
it off.
Close.
Yeah, okay, I love it. This is just a pure platforming game. It's just like Sonic the Hedgehog, except it's with lots of blood.
I kind of like the idea of it being more like one of the 3D Sonics, because I like the idea of some nice procedural limb removals and so that you're sort of you're behind Sally.
Oh, that's so the boss battles, isn't it?
Like as she rolls down the hill,
you're going for the arteries and all this sort of stuff on the farmer.
Yeah. You're having to like hit the weak spots. For sure.
And in a fleshy body, I mean, there's so many weak spots.
There's so many weak spots when it comes to a saw blade attacking a fleshy human body.
Oh, but later enemies have, like, you know, medieval armor and stuff, but you know that there's like, those spots underneath the armpit and all that sort of stuff that you can...
Yeah, then you then it's a... Yeah, then it's a very, like... Wait for your spot. They say, you know, go to do an overhead swing. It's like, okay, zoom in there.
Ooh, I'm just imagining blunting yourself on metal because obviously you're made for cutting through wood and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so you hit the metal and like you're having to then find yourself a grindstone to actually sharpen yourself.
Yes,
back up
I was going
to
say there's definitely a mechanic around how sharp you are. And I wonder if there are... Do you think there are ways to sharpen yourself on the way, though? Like, can you, like, take a corner on an asphalt road and that'll, like, sharpen the side of you really?
Like, concrete, limestone.
Yeah, just all those limestone roads that are everywhere, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, it's when you're going through the mine that you know, you can sort of jump up onto the side. You like...
The mine level would be interesting because the mine carts will not hold you very well.
Especially if you start spinning, you know, doing the sonic
spin. Well, I'm not sure you can stop spinning.
No, I'm talking about if you're in a mine cart, then you kind of, you know, you can be sort of still. But if you start up a Sally spin, you know, you're gonna start cutting through the bottom of the
mine. I don't know. I kind of like the idea that... You're always, like, anything wood you just will cut through at any point. And so you get to that mine level and it's like, oh, yeah, great, a minecart level. You, like, bounce yourself into the minecart and just bisect it. You just cut it in two. And it's like, oh, fuck, that's not going to work. And then the rest of it is, like, you actually have to, like, lodge yourself in the train tracks and, like, zoom down rails.
Yeah, but you got to be very careful because all those wood trusses and all that sort of stuff that, you know, hold the mine together, you cut through the wrong one of those and you've got
that'd be yeah but that'd be awesome for set pieces. Like, I'm picturing a level going through a mine where it's like, okay, well, the only way here is to grind this minecart rail, but there's a there's a truss that's close and the whole mine has to collapse behind you because you just chopped down the wooden truss. Like, that's cool.
There's just I'd love to see a 3D platform in which you play, you know, a very kindly saw blade.
Oh, she doesn't mean to hurt anyone.
No, it's just her nature. And, you know, she didn't mean to bisect that deer long ways.
I don't think, you know what's interesting is I don't think we've ever used the word bisect on this show, and I think we've just used it two or three times. It's great. I'm not complaining. No, I like that a lot. I think that's... I love the idea that you're just sort of getting this monologue as you go. Like, she's talking as she, like, kills people. She's like, oh, sorry. Get out of my way. I'm a saw blade.
But she's thinking it. She doesn't have any way of,
like, vocalizing
saying these things, vocalizing these things. And people are running away from her. And all she's trying to do is find her love.
Yeah.
And her love happens to be, like, the first ever log that she bisected.
Wait, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess that's a star-crossed lovers situation where a saw blade loves a log. Mm-hmm. So that's fine. That's cool.
Yeah.
Liam. Liam the log.
I'm not going to yuck anyone's yums.
Yeah, yeah. If a saw blade wants to fuck a log, fine. Okay, 3, 2, 1, click. Or whatever we're doing. What are we doing next?
Should we go back to our next... Click pitch. Well, second chance click pitch.
Second chance click pitch. Yeah, we can do that. Do we want to do the same episode?
Same episode.
All right.
Elevator killing.
Elevator killing.
Yep. And then we did get a second word because we couldn't think of anything good with elevator killing, but we won't go with that yet because
Elevator killing. How did we not come up with anything for elevator killing? It was our first episode, I guess.
But I've got this idea of it's basically Hitman, but all the kills have to occur in an elevator. Now, how many different kills can you have in an elevator? You can cut the cable from above. You can get in there as a delivery guy and then inject someone with poison. You can basically, every kill has to occur in an elevator because that's what the client wants.
I feel like that's very similar either to another game we did or to the game we ended up coming up with. It sounds very familiar. My idea, that my thought was, is this kind of like Spy Party? But it's all in elevators. Now, I don't know if... So for those who don't know, Spy Party is a game where one person is a spy in a party. They've got a bunch of missions to do. The other person is a sniper. They've got a view where they can kind of go all the way around the party. But the levels are designed in such a way that there are places that... you can't always see everyone at once. And there are a bunch of other NPCs in the party. And the spy has to kind of blend in with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if this is a situation where you're sort of monitoring an elevator. And maybe you're like a security guard or something. And you can switch between views on each floor and one inside the elevator, perhaps. And so you're having to do sort of analysis around like who's getting out on what floor. And then maybe someone dies. Someone dies, and it's like, okay, from what I've known... So it could even be that you're going back through security tapes or something. You're essentially trying to figure out who had the opportunity to perform this killing. Like, it could be a delayed thing. It was like they injected them with a poison. And so you find out, okay, like... It must have happened within 5 minutes of the death, right? And so it's like, okay, the death was at this time, so I got to go back, figure out who was in the elevator with who, this sort of thing.
I do like the idea of going with your idea about the video cameras and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
The video camera inside this elevator is busted. So The only thing that you've got is basically all the other video cameras that sort of are on, showing all the hallways, and on each floor you have a camera that can see into the elevator when it opens.
Yep.
On basically a dead body is being found inside the elevator, and you now have to actually go and sort of trace back who. Where did this lady get on, you know, on what floor, and you know, can you work out who actually killed this person?
Okay, yeah, I like that. I like that you can't see inside the elevator because yes, sort of essentially start.
This person killed them, and they got in there through this floor. Like, I saw it on the camera.
Well, I guess it comes down because I mean, however you do it, it can't be a direct killing. Like, it can't be someone slit their throat because one, either they're the only two people in the elevator and one person gets out, or two, there are other people in there who saw them. So I think it does have to be some sort of delay. I'm not sure whether
you need necessarily the multiplayer aspect of it. This could be a fun, like, murder mystery single-player game.
I was actually thinking it made more sense to be single-player, yes.
Yeah.
I don't think this is... You have to play someone who rides up and down in the elevator waiting to kill someone while the other person watches. No, I think this is... A level starts... Whether it starts at the death and then you're going back through... Like, you've essentially generated the different comings and goings on the elevator. Or, you know, you watch for a while... And then you can scrub back and forth.
I kind of like the idea that you've also got like a log of sensors that, you know, you can see that a sensor was triggered in the air vents at this time. And when you match it up with the times, it's like, oh, no, that wouldn't make sense because, you know, the elevator was on this floor at this stage and never went down to that floor. And
yeah, I wonder if you could do... I'm picturing some sort of interface where you can kind of link different events. So you've got the footage, and then you've got maybe like, you know, such and such as key card was swiped on, you know, floor on five.
Penthouse. And-
yeah. And so you might be able to see, oh, well, I know that person wasn't there at that time because I've got them on camera in the elevator. So now follow that person, find where someone could have stolen their key card, right? And then you're sort of, you're narrowing down the suspects in that way to see, yeah, who it could have been. So it doesn't even necessarily have to be killing.
I'm sort of thinking, why hasn't this sort of idea been done before? Like, I really want to, you know, play with these security cameras and try to, you know, trace back. Even if it's a, you know, an adventure game sort of thing where there's literally, it's
just one solution.
Scripted, there's one solution. It's, you know, it's a cheap sort of experience in which you just...
I think that could be a really cool single play experience for sure, because then you've got the opportunity to flesh out characters a bit and have some dialogue and stuff.
Yeah, craft a story around, you know, just because this seems to be the way it goes, you know, it doesn't actually mean that this is the person who you thought actually died could turn out to be, oh, this is not Mrs. Phelps. This is actually, you know, one of the waitresses from downstairs in disguise as Mrs. Phelps, and Mrs. Phelps is
right.
Actually,
yeah, you essentially end up like uncovering a whole conspiracy of crime that's been happening in your hotel or whatever, or apartment building that you are the security guard for. Well, because I like that idea then, if it is sort of a more scripted narrative thing, that at certain points, like, once you've solved a certain puzzle, it's like, well, someone comes with some more evidence, and it's like a recording from their, you know, doorbell, you know, their video doorbell or something. And so you're essentially then just, you've got more evidence of where people were at certain times, and maybe that provides an alibi for someone or something. That's cool. Yeah, I feel like you could really do... I feel like I say this for every game. You could really do some cool stuff with that.
That you could.
No, that's awesome. I feel like this is one of those nights where, like, every game we come up with is like, oh, I could make that. Like, that'd be easy. You know, here's how we do it.
Okay, so let's go for another movie.
Let's go for another movie. Hit that button. American Gigolo.
A Nice Girl Like You.
Don't know that one.
No.
Not, I don't know American Gigolo either, but I have heard of it.
No, neither do I. Okay, you go through your synopsis.
Julian makes a lucrative living as an escort to older women in the Los Angeles area. He begins a relationship with Michelle, a local politician's wife, without expecting any pay. One of his clients is murdered, and Detective Sunday begins pumping him for details. That's an interesting use of word. On his different clients, something he's reluctant to do considering the nature of his work. Julian begins to suspect he's being framed. Meanwhile, Michelle begins to fall in love with him.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is.
Lucy Neal is thrown for a loop when she is accused of being too inhibited by her ex-boyfriend. In an effort to prove him wrong, Lucy creates a rather wild to-do list that sends her on a whirlwind and surprising journey of self-discovery, friendship, and new love.
Okay. I mean, those both have some sort of narrative potential.
Yeah. I kind of, because we've just done a murder mystery, I'm kind of sort of going over to the A Nice Girl Like You sort of side, because how many adventure games can you think that have a female protagonist that have nothing to do with, like, basically you can start it out as like a, she's just broken up with this
guy,
and then this douchebag, but then the whole adventure that she goes on is basically not to do with love, and is all to do with
her own self-improvement.
It's all self-improvement. It's all, you know, she learns new things about herself, and then you forget about the new love, or the new love could actually be cooking, or it could be, you know, traveling or something
like
that.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. A bit of a kind of Eat, Pray, Love You situation, but
yeah,
less kind of pretentious. That's cool. I like that. All right, so it definitely lends itself to what is, you know, one of our go-to genres of just a point-and-click adventure kind of narrative sort of thing. So is this sort of just, a bit of a character study of this woman who is trying to find herself? Like, are we doing... is this a wacky Monkey Island-style puzzle game in the end, or are we going a bit more serious with it?
I kind of like the idea of juxtaposing the seriousness with the wackiness of like a Monkey Island-esque adventure.
Right, so it's still like, kind of that classic adventure game puzzle
yeah.
sort of system. So this woman who is, you know, just trying to improve herself as a person has an unlimited inventory that she somehow fits
yep.
on her person. And, you know, has the ability to kind of combine items into useful things to solve problems.
Okay. What's her name?
So...
In this, it's Lucy Neal, but we can...
Oh, yeah. Lucy Neal. no, that's fine. Lucy. Let's go with Lucy.
Lucy is a nice name.
It's fine. Okay, and Lucy finds herself sort of in a emotional crisis, essentially, where during a breakup, her ex-boyfriend essentially
douchebag.
Says... Yeah, essentially says that she's not good enough as a person, that she's boring.
We keep on going back to
or,
J names, so I'm trying to think of a douchebaggy J name. Josh,
yes. Sorry to any non-douche Joshes out there, but your parents gave you a douche name. Yeah, fuck Josh. Fucking Josh.
Josh. Yeah, so my mind keeps on going to on this series of discovery, she actually finds out some horrible things about Josh in the fact that he was actually part of, like, a Satan-worshipping cult and, like, trying to sacrifice it to the devil and all this sort of stuff. Like,
I don't know that we need to, like, super villainize him that much. I think him just being a douchebag is enough. But I do like the idea of finding out that he's even douchier than you thought. Maybe you come into contact with some of his other exes. And get a bit of history.
Oh no,
there.
We really demonize him. He's a flat earther.
That's fine. There you go. There you go.
That's worse than the Satan worshipping cult. Like, you wish that it was a Satan worshipping cult.
At least then there's some conviction behind it, and you know he's done some research or something. No, he's just dense.
And her surprising
unlike the
journey
Earth.
Of self-discovery is finding out that the Earth is actually round.
Well, she starts out as a flat earther. No, I think she goes forth, meets interesting and wacky characters. I think maybe she like heads straight to the airport and just buys the first ticket and
yep.
ends up somewhere interesting. You know,
ends up in like Tahiti or something like that, some sort of island nation.
I think Ireland is good. I think Ireland is good because then you can kind of limit the
movement to just that chain of islands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that. Ends up on an island that's.
Does it become a Joe versus the volcano sort of thing, where you know she's like pegged as like the potential sacrifice?
The only reason I don't want to go that is I feel like there's some problematic stuff around, like, indigenous peoples of those islands.
Yeah, true.
No, I think maybe this is a situation where it's a resort island, but it's, like, a failed resort. Like, it's a struggling resort island.
It's run down.
It's like, run down. There are people still working there.
I love that view of she's looking at the brochure. And then she pulls it down, and it's just a rundown version of the picture on the brochure.
Yeah, totally. That's always a nice little transition. And yeah, I think then you're exploring this place. You're sort of, I don't know. Maybe one of the things is she wanted to. So the vibes I'm getting here are a cross between Forgetting Sarah Marshall, because mm-hmm. I was going to go that she like wants to surf. And fucking Leisure Suit Larry 7. Was it 7? No, 6. Yeah. 6, I think. The one where he's on like...
Shape up or slip out?
No. I was thinking the other one where he's on like... he is at some sort of hotel.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It was
shape
six.
Up or slip out.
No, wait.
Love for Sale is number six.
Oh, Love for Sale. Yeah, okay. Yes, number six.
is it like a fitness club that has...
Fitness club, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just love how bad, like, the fitness and all that sort of stuff is. Like, all the equipment's breaking down and all this sort of stuff. But she finds her way and you know, she sort of learns new things about herself. Like, she doesn't need a man in her life, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think she goes through some difficult experiences, some life-changing mm-hmm. events. You know, maybe there's a scene where you have to, like, get away from a shark when you're trying to learn to surf. Yes, it follows you onto the land. That's part of the puzzle. Maybe she has. I like actually, I kind of like the idea of some sort of blossoming relationship that just goes, or she realizes she doesn't need, or that she doesn't need it, essentially. Like, that she, like, maybe it starts off romantic, but she very quickly sees red flags that remind her of her past relationships, but she cuts it off. Like, she mm-hmm. has sort of learned enough to know, like, no, this is toxic. And that she doesn't need to be, like, to have romantic stuff on this island. She can just, yeah. I don't want to go too deep into the whole, like, you know, empowering women finding themselves tropes. But, you know, obviously there's some interesting stuff there, and women should be empowered.
Well, maybe the self-discovery is that she, on this island, she finds a clone of herself.
She finds a clone of herself and falls in
and
love.
And it turns into, you know, that movie with Ewan McGregor, The Island. It turns out that...
Oh, that the whole time she was just being bred for organs?
Well, the clone on the island was. she's right. One of these...
She's like, oh, that's what that gift card was for my 18th birthday. I forgot about that. Clones are us.
Jeez, that was a fucked up movie.
All right. I think we're going to do a little bit extra tonight. We're kind of at the time we usually finish up, but let's jump back. Let's do the last...
Let's jump back to episode one.
Let's do the last second chance click pitch of that episode.
Which
and we
was...
have future trapping.
Ooh. So... I like time travel, and I want to definitely go to time travel.
Okay. That's not where I was going, but all right, let's each kind of pitch our first instincts.
Okay. So my first instinct is kind of jumping off of something that we talked about last week, which was, mm-hmm. or not last week, but the week before, whatever it was. It may have been a couple of weeks ago. It was
Recently.
Recently. Where we were talking about having to go back in time and like hide things, and then it was there.
Very Bill and Ted.
Yes. Very Bill and Ted's. Yeah. I like the idea that when you find out where something's going to be, you can go back in time and set a trap.
Like, okay.
It's sort of like a not necessarily an animal trapping sort of thing, but maybe it's a Hitman-esque game, but it's got that time travel thing in which you can set up elaborate traps.
I do like the idea of a Hitman game where you've got some aspect of time travel, mostly because when I play Hitman, I'm usually so overwhelmed by all the different events and things that are happening. Like, I don't actually have the strategic brain, and maybe I wouldn't for this game either, but I don't actually have the strategic brain to go, okay, well, if I do this and then do that, they're going to be here at this time. So having some sort of, like, even just a rewind ability or something, or some
a
sort
pause
of time
slash, you know, you can pause them, move into position, set a trap just above the door that they're about to go through.
Exactly. So you've got a bit more flexibility there where, yes, you still have to be aware of, like, where they're going to be, and you still have to, like, make sure that people don't see you and stuff, but you've got this limited time use of, okay, but I'm going to just freeze time for 20 seconds and get through this room that otherwise would be really difficult because it's full of guards, and get my way up to wait in his, you know, living chambers or whatever.
I know. I kind of like the idea that you've got like a 5 minute a 5 minute switch in which you can go back to, you can either pause or you can go back 5 minutes. And when you go back those 5 minutes, you've got now 5 minutes. You know, in 5 minutes, this guy's going to be coming through this door because you've just seen it happen. So therefore, you've got 5 minutes to set up the trap. You know, you may have to go source the bits and pieces, but you at least know in 5 minutes, as long as you don't change the future by talking to the guy.
Or like, you know, killing the wrong person.
Yeah, or killing the wrong person at the wrong time, or causing a commotion in the wrong way. But then you can also have something that, you know, you may have taken something that he actually used in the past 5 minutes, and therefore it changes, you know, he's now spending 3 minutes looking for this item that you've stolen.
Yeah, that could get very complicated very quickly. I do like the general idea, and I feel like that would be an interesting twist on the Hitman formula.
Yeah. Okay, you said that you had something off
yeah, so time. Look, my first instinct was to go down a kind of a... Did you ever play Viva Pinata?
I saw it on the Xbox 360. I never actually purchased it.
So the idea behind Viva Pinata was you were creating a garden, but different kinds of like flowers and things in your garden would attract these different creatures. So there's sort of a Pokemon aspect of like, got to catch them all. You got to know these different types of creatures and they'd breed and stuff, but then certain types of creatures would attract other types of creatures. So you were really building up this garden in a way that would attract more creatures and different types of creatures into your mm-hmm. garden. So when I heard future trapping, I went kind of to this mode of like, okay, this is a future world. Maybe you're on a different planet. Maybe you're even... I think essentially you're like a poacher / farmer on a colonized planet. And you are exploring this world and finding out about all the different types of creatures that are on it and essentially how to trap them. And then you bring them back to your farm and you're keeping them there. And so you get this, I'm thinking you sort of get this gameplay loop of like, okay, well, the first things are like these larvae that grow on the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And they're easy. You literally just go up and grab them. But then you find out that like, oh, but these like pterodactyl-like bird creatures, I can use these as bait. And if I build, you know, a fucking, you know, lasso trap or whatever, then I'll be able to capture them. And then they lay a certain type of egg, which hatches into, or whatever. Like, I can use the resources from that egg, or like this snake type creature will try to eat those eggs. And so if I put that in like a snare trap or a box trap or something, then I'll be able to capture those. And so it's sort of building up your whole, for one, your knowledge of all of the fauna, I guess, of this world. Mm-hmm. At the same time as farming them and keeping, you know, you need three of those pterodactyl-like birds to keep yourself in eggs because they have a variety of uses or whatever.
And then you need to use one of them as a can opener and they say, it's a living.
Yeah, exactly. The birds, yes. You start using the birds for, like, dishwashing and stuff.
I just like the idea that basically you remember something about like the Flintstones and how they used all the animals to like be all their instruments. So therefore, you're also going to be doing the same thing.
I'm fine with that.
Get out the house.
You can
automation with
essentially
animals.
Yes, like automate your farm based on these different creatures that you've managed to capture and train. That's fine. I like that. You've got like, you know, the big kind of elephant-ish creature with a long tail, and you start just like training it to go up and down your fields to lay your seed lines or whatever to fucking plow it. But you have to capture them first. You got to build your way up to that.
So, with the bigger enemies, is there like Monster Hunter-esque expeditions that you got to go out on that you like?
I think so.
These
I think what you want to end up with is essentially that scene from Jurassic Park: The Lost World, where they're like driving all the jeeps and herding the creatures, and like they've got the long fucking lassos on sticks and the cattle prods, and and guns and stuff. And so, yeah, but you need to know that, like, okay, well, I'm only going to be able to capture, you know, that fucking fast turtle creature that I found.
Compared to the slow hare.
Yeah, exactly. Which isn't actually anything like a rabbit. It's just covered in really long hair. It's like kind of like Cousin It.
Yeah, and it's really, really slow.
But it's really slow. But the thing is, like, its hairs are venomous. So you have to have gloves made from the skin of...
of the fast turtle.
Or something. Or of its predator, essentially.
Well, I'm thinking the fast turtle is the predator of the slow hare.
Sure. Yeah. The only way to catch a fast turtle is to get on a jeep with, a hook and... and essentially, like, grab it around its neck. Covered in
like the skin of the medium speed tortoise, because as we know, the tortoise is the enemy of the turtle.
Yeah, and then the turtle is just hates everyone.
It's just a character from D&D, and he actually talks and then call him Kevin, and we pushed him over.
And then the Squirtle. Do you want to do one more movie?
Or do you want to? Yeah, let's do one more movie. Let's do one more movie.
Episode 200, extra long, extra segments. My movie, the original Halloween.
My movie, the somewhat animated Titan AE.
Okay, I actually haven't seen... I don't know if I've seen any of the Halloween movies.
Really?
Yeah. No, you know what? I've seen Halloween H2O. It was one of the early DVDs. I think it came with my DVD player.
Yeah, probably. Okay. So, Halloween, Michael Myers, killing people. Yeah. We know what that's all about. Titan AE, a young man finds out that he holds the key to restoring hope and ensuring survival for the human race, while an alien species called the Dredge are bent on mankind's destruction. I think Titan AE has a lot of potential
for
a VR space adventure.
Definitely, definitely. I remember when this came out. I don't remember anything about it.
Neither do I.
It's got a huge cast. Matt Damon, Bill Pullman, yep. John Leguizamo, Nathan Lane, Jenny Garofalo, Drew Barrymore, Ron Perlman. Yeah, it's like huge cast. All right. So let's just go based on the synopsis, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're obviously not going to go deep. So this is an alien invasion, an alien attack movie.
Yeah, I see this as basically this character has been on the run for a while. So it's almost an unreliable narrator sort of idea. He's mm-hmm. been on the run for a while, he and his baby sister.
Okay, that's cool. I'm liking the idea of a VR adventure, like you said, with essentially a companion character,
yep.
baby sister... What age are you thinking of baby sister? Like 8? Or like a baby?
Or
baby?
12. No, I'm thinking
younger sister.
8 to 12, you know, sort of preteen.
Yep.
You're barely a teenager yourself, you know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking your character's sort of like 15, 16.
Yeah.
Being thrust into parenthood sort of thing and is looking after the baby sister. The key to restoring hope and ensuring survival for the human race is the fact that your sister has these powers, basically, that she can, I'm thinking she can almost terraform a planet, but
well,
because
yeah,
she can spark life.
I'm wondering if she, well, I don't even think
it's like that, but I'm...
No, okay, that's fine. I'm ignoring the actual movie plot right now. Is this more if she's like some sort of tech genius? Like, is she...
Ooh, is she basically Shuri from Black Panther?
That's kind of where I was going. Yeah, that's kind of where my mind is going.
So the key to restoring hope is the fact that she's a technological genius.
Yes.
Yeah,
but
I love that.
I
she's
do
developed
like a
terraforming
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you're looking for a colony that you can
it's
basically
a terraforming
terraform.
Virus. I feel like it's like some sort of self-replicating biological thing that will, yeah, essentially go through and terraform a planet.
Okay. The reason why the Dredger are actually going after this boy and girl is because they unwittingly have tried using this terraforming virus before on the Dredger's homeworld.
Ooh.
And basically...
But it wasn't ready.
It was ready. It was just that the Dredge were living underneath in caves underneath the surface. And most of them got wiped out. And
The siblings used it before?
The siblings used it on the Dredge, and that's why the Dredge are now after them, because basically they're looking for vengeance on the fact that they accidentally wiped out all of the Dredge.
So our fucking protagonists are
actually the antagonists.
Albeit accidental,
yeah,
like genocidal...
yeah.
Caused accidental genocide... Okay, that's dark.
It's dark.
Yes, that's cool. I like it. So, I did read something there in the synopsis that... I think in the synopsis, the Dredge had destroyed Earth and humans had become these, like, nomad race that were ridiculed by all other creatures. I like the idea of them being the nomad race and that Earth was destroyed. Whether or not it was the Dredge that did that, I don't care.
Yeah,
I feel like not. I feel like something else. Maybe we even take it a bit more modern times. It's like Earth was so contaminated by climate change, like it became uninhabitable, and so humans have found their way off and colonized space. But they're kind of ridiculed because like they're considered filth. They fucked up their own planet. They're refugees. Which
Earth was one of the weirdest places in the universe, because it's the only place in which carbon-based life forms actually grew. And nothing else uses the poison that is oxygen. Basically, it's all like methane-based, silicon-based
life
forms.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's cool. I like that.
So, you know, basically...
And so then that makes sense that, yes, they changed this planet into... They terraformed it. Into an oxygen atmosphere that, yes, it essentially killed almost everyone on the planet. But, yeah, because they lived underground, they thought it was uninhabited, essentially.
So it's just it's a mistake, but it's like a...
It is a mistake, but it's a... Level. Yeah, it's like a fucking huge mistake. And it's huge ramifications that kill billions of creatures. So, yes, now... Essentially, the like remaining Dredge are hunting down what they consider literally is true. Like, yeah, these people who wiped out their race.
Now, could you get to the point where they find out that it's just this young boy and this young girl, and they unwittingly, you know, they made a mistake and all this sort of stuff, and they sort of...
I think
work something out.
Well, I do think you end it with the Dredge sparing them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a happy ending. I don't think there's any possibility for a happy ending. I think it's that the siblings realize what they've done. They're like obviously racked with guilt and maybe just like dedicate themselves to...
Well, maybe the Dredge
helping them now.
You know, sort of
find them a new planet.
Well, what I'm thinking is, you know, they find this planet and it's perfect and they're about to set it off, and then they find out that there's another cave-dwelling civilization,
or,
and they stop, and the Dredge find out that, you know, realize that, they're just looking for a home sort of thing.
Maybe, or they find a planet that is perfect for humans. No terraforming needed, but instead they terraform it. For the Dredge. They give up a home for humans.
Yep.
To create a new home for the Dredge. Because they are also now...
Homeless.
Yeah.
That's actually really a really poignant ending
Yeah.
And
some level of redemption.
You can always have some sort of choice depending on like how you actually do it throughout the game. You know, you're sort of going almost Elite Dangerous wise, you're sort of flying through space and
yeah, maybe. So
checking
out
these different planets and
I was going to bring up then how the actual gameplay works, because I like the idea of it being VR. I like the idea that you spend a lot of time in like the cockpit of a spaceship, like sort of just a little runaround kind of deal, but it's got light speed or whatever, just because this uniform, or maybe there's some sort of like Mass Effect style, you know, traveling between systems or something.
I'd love it if they come across like a mining ship, you know, sort of got a colony of humans on board, and they're sort of, they make mention of, oh, you're the McIntyre cousins. Oh, you're the McIntyres.
Sort of kids.
Oh, yeah. You know, we don't want to have anything to do with you. And they send them off, and you know, they sort of get, that's where you sort of realize that something's not quite right. And they're kind of well known throughout all of humanity and all that sort of stuff. And they're seen as like, you know, not nice people.
Well, and I think it's known that the Dredge are after them.
Yeah.
As well. And so people don't want to associate with them because they're worried that, you know, if we've got the McIntyres along on our, you know, caravan between different systems or whatever, then the chances that we'll get attacked by the Dredge are tenfold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm thinking from a gameplay point of view, like I said, it's very much mostly set in the cockpit of this ship where, you know, you'll have people hailing you and you have conversations and dialogue trees and stuff. You'll have dialogue between your sister and you who is, like, kind of wandering around the ship at different times. I think it's fairly linear.
Can you send down, like, if you need, you know, certain resources and that sort of stuff, can you send down like a lander to a planet and it goes and collects resources for you? Or
I mean, again, I think it depends on how systems based we make this versus narrative and what your sort of missions are, essentially. Like, if you're talking about it being mostly cockpit based, are you having like, is there like fucking dogfighting and stuff? Is this like a TIE fighter situation where, you know, you've got, something I was bringing up.
I was just thinking about Space Quest 3 there, and I'm going, yeah, it just didn't fit in there.
I'm just trying to figure out what the challenge is then, because, like, otherwise we're essentially, like, where's the gameplay otherwise? Like, I think so far this would make a really cool VR story.
Visual novel sort of thing.
Visual novel.
Interactive story.
I mean, maybe that's all it is.
Yeah. I do like the idea of there being, you know, a lot more interactions with colonies of humans along the way and all that sort of stuff. And you basically, when you realize that the second that they find out that you're the McIntyres, they don't want to talk to you at all or anything like that. Mm. They sort of shun you away from them. But if you can come in there and say, oh yeah, we're just the Smiths. And, you know, you get away with it sort of thing.
Yeah, it would come down to the writing as to how well that would work. But, yeah, that's true, actually. I could just see this as an interesting, essentially VR visual novel where you've got some dialogue and exposition that goes between you and your sister. You can still do VR stuff. Like, you still have some stuff in there. Like, you can fucking throw shit around and
you're having to repair something on the ship, you know, like,
oh yeah. Or even just navigation and stuff. You're hitting buttons on the cockpit. You're like,
yep,
grabbing,
you go down to the core and you gotta take out the old core and put the new one in and
repair the cores, balance them. Yeah. Yeah, that could be cool. Just essentially sort of little VR interactions. They're almost not even game elements, but just to have something to do and to drive the story forward in different ways. And then you just find out this history and how the characters react.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea that if the Dredge do actually come along while you're docked to this mining station or something like that, then you've got to try and hide while you know, conversations are going on, and you know, you got to try and, you know, keep your face covered or something like that so that they don't see who you are. And
yeah, you could throw in essentially different little mini games almost of just for that little section.
And that's how you sort of find out the next part of the story, you know?
Yeah. That's cool.
But just, yeah, the idea of having different aliens that you're sort of conversing with as well as other humans.
Well, that's it. I think then you're essentially creating a vehicle for the lore of this, you know, universe, the history of these siblings, and pushing this narrative forward of them finding some level of well, for one, finding out what they did, realizing what they did, and then finding some level of redemption at the end.
And maybe when you actually find out all this stuff, you've got that sort of choice at the end that you can convert the virus into you know, doing something good for the dredge, or you can basically
create a home for humans and
create a home for humans and realize that, hang on, you've met all these humans throughout the game, but you've barely met any dredge. Like, basically, there's just one convoy of dredge that are left.
Well, maybe. I don't think you want to give the player that much reason to go one way or the other. I think there's a similar amount of dredge versus human out there. And maybe you haven't come across the dredge because they are a bit more secretive and they've kind of been, like, you know, hiding out, or they've got a... Maybe they're a bit like the... what's in Mass Effect? What's Tali's? Is it Tali's?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyway, like, where they're essentially a nomadic convoy of this huge fleet that's just traveling around because they've been displaced. And look, there's some very interesting stuff there around refugee, you know, politics around refugees and how they're handled, and both from the human side in this situation and the dredge side. And yeah, I think there's a lot of cool writing that could happen there and be told in that format.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, there you go. That's Titan AE retold. It's a VR story experience.
With extremely dark undertones.
Yeah, jeez, that's deep. That fucking 12-year-old girl killed almost an entire
civilization.
Race.
Genocide.
Her name's Jenny. Jennyside.
Jenny McIntyre.
Jenny McIntyre, but she committed genocide. Well, no, mate, the dredge now want to commit genocide because of the genocide. The Jenny decided...
But yeah, I do love that idea that she's, you know, this biological genius. You know, she can.
Yeah, well, and just I think that creates fantastic drama that a 12-year-old accidentally wiped out an entire race of creatures. Like, like, that's wild.
But I'm kind of liking the idea that whatever your character's name is, are the one that actually hit the button. You know, she basically, she was saying, like, they do a jump back in time, and she's saying, oh, I need to do more testing. We need to probe the planet to make sure that there's no other life. And he goes, nah, bang. And just hits the button.
It's fine. Yeah, just do it. There's no one here. Look, it's desolate. Yeah.
There's no signs of life.
I love that. Cool. All right. Well, this was a extra long episode, so I hope you enjoyed it. But thank you again for joining us this week on BitStorm. That was episode 200. We've done a lot of game designs in that time. So for those who...
And we've forgotten most of them, as we couldn't even remember the first ones that we ever did.
As we have demonstrated. But you know what? That just shows we'll never fucking run out. That's actually what we're going to do from now on. Next episode, we will go to episode 2 and redo the click pictures from that one.
Blind reflection, because that's the only one.
Yeah, I think it was just one. If you want to find all those previous 199 episodes, plus a few little extras here and there, online, if you somehow stumbled across episode 200, go to podchaser.com/bitstorm. All of the episodes are there. You can also just go through and check out our creator profiles and see what other shows we have guested on over the years. We're also part of the 8-Bit Collective. Yeah, we've done a few. We're also part of the 8-Bit Collective, and this is a group of podcasters talking about pop culture and video games and all sorts of stuff. go and check out 8bit.net. Have a look at some of the great shows there.
Do you like podcasts? Do you like Australia? Do you like gaming? Therefore, if you said yes to all or some of those questions, check out the Australasian Gaming Podcast Network on Facebook or at AGP Network on Twitter. And finally, we'd like to thank Kurudust for the use of the song Mount Defiance off of the album Containment Failure for the past 200 episodes.
That's right. So thank you again for joining us this week on BitStorm. There'll be a new episode next week. As usual, I'm Ben Slinger.
I'm Trevor Scott.
And watch out, I'm a saw blade coming through. Oh, I'm sorry.
That Red Hill Zone, damn it.
I cut your arm off. Sorry about your arm.
It's okay. Didn't need it anyway.